imposter. I am the real Siddhartha, O nameless priest, and I have come to claim my body, one that is whole and strong and without hidden disease. You will serve me in this matter. You will serve me willingly or unwillingly, but you will serve me.
You think so?
I think so, replied the prince.
Attack!
Cried the master, and he swung his dark staff at the prince's head. The prince ducked the blow and retreated, drawing his blade. Twice he parried the staff, then it fell upon his shoulder, a glancing blow, but sufficient to stagger him. He circled around the white mare, pursued by the master. Dodging, keeping the horse between himself and his opponent, he raised the horn to his lips and sounded it three times. Its notes rose above the fierce noises of the combat on the palace stair. Panting, he turned and raised his guard in time to ward off a temple blow that would surely have slain him had it landed.
"It is written," said the master, almost sobbing out the words, "that he who gives orders without having the power to enforce them, that man is a fool."
"Even 10 years ago," panted the prince, "you'd never have laid that staff on me." He hacked at it, hoping to split the wood, but the other always managed to turn the edge of his blade so that while he nicked it and shaved it in places, the grain held and the staff remained of a piece. Using it as a single stick, the master laid a solid blow across the prince's left side, and he felt his ribs break within him. He fell. It was not by design that it happened, for the blade spun from out his hand as he collapsed. But the weapon caught the master across the shins, and he dropped to his knees, howling.
"We're evenly matched at that," gasped the prince. "My age against your fat."
He drew his dagger as he lay there, but could not hold it steady. He rested his elbow on the ground. The master, tears in his eyes, attempted to rise and fell again to his knees. There came the sound of many hooves. "I am not a fool," said the prince, "and now I have the power to enforce my orders."
"What is happening?"
"The rest of my lancers are arrived. Had I entered in full force, you'd have holed up like a geck in a woodpile, and it might have taken days to pull your palace apart and fetch you out. Now I have you in the palm of my hand." The master raised his staff. The prince drew back his arm.
"Lower it," he said, "or I'll throw the dagger. I don't know myself whether I'll miss or hit, but I may hit. You're not anxious to gamble against the real death, are you?"
The master lowered his staff.
"You will know the real death," said the master, "when the wardens of Karma have made dog meat of your horse soldiers."
The prince coughed, stared disinterestedly at his bloody spittle. "In the meantime, let's discuss politics," he suggested. After the sounds of battle had ended, it was Strake, tall, dusty, his hair near matching the gore that dried on his blade. Strake, who was nuzzled by the white mare as he saluted his prince and said,
"It is over."
"Do you hear that, Master of Karma?" asked the prince. "Your wardens are dog meat."
The master did not answer. "Serve me now, and you may have your life," said the prince. "Refuse, and I'll have it."
"I will serve you," said the master.
"Strake," ordered the prince, "send 2 men down into the town, one to fetch back Narada, my physician, and the other to go to the Street of the Weavers and bring here Yanaveg, the sailmaker. Of the 3 lancers who remain at Haukana's, leave but 1 to hold the Shan of Irabek till sundown. He is then to bind him and leave him, joining us here himself." Strake smiled and saluted. "Now bring men to bear me within this hall, and to keep an eye on this master." He burned his old body along with all the others. The wardens of Karma, to a man, had passed in battle. Of the 7 nameless masters, only the one who had been fat survived. While the banks of sperm and ova, the growth tanks and the body lockers could not be transported, the transfer equipment itself was dismantled under the direction of Dr. Narada.
and its components were loaded onto the horses of those who had fallen in the battle. The young prince sat upon the white mare and watched the jaws of flame close upon the bodies. 8 pyres blazed against the pre-dawn sky. The one who had been a sailmaker turned his eyes to the pyre nearest the gate, the last to be ignited. Its flames were only just now reaching the top, where lay the gross bulk of one who wore a robe of black, a circle of yellow on the breast. When the flames touched it and the robe began to smolder, the dog who cowered in the ruined garden raised his head in a howl that was near to a sob. "This day your sin account is filled to overflowing," said the sailmaker. "But ah, my prayer account," replied the prince. "I'll stand on that for the time being. Future theologians will have to make the final decision, though, as to the acceptability of all those slugs in the praomats. Let heaven wonder now what happened here this day, where I am, if I am, and who. The time has come to ride, my captain, into the mountains for a while, and then our separate ways for safety's sake. I am not sure as to the road I will follow, save that it leads to heaven's gate, and I must go armed." "Binder of demons," said the other, and he smiled. The lancer chief approached. The prince nodded to him. Orders were shouted. The columns of mounted men moved forward, passed out through the gates of the Palace of Karma, turned off the roadway, and headed up the slope that lay to the southeast of the city of Maharatha, comrades blazing like the dawn at their back.